Hello and welcome to the special Thanksgiving edition of the Texas Tribune Tribcast. We're taping one day early and posting one day early so you may travel with us if you want to.
No pat downs.
Who would want? Don't touch my junk, Ben. Yeah. Who would want to listen to this podcast on Thanksgiving?
Something to listen to instead of killing your family.
I was just thinking, if you're driving up to Dallas, you know, you could listen to the Texas Tribune.
One of the things to be thankful for is no podcast on Thursday.
Exactly right.
I'm reporter Elise Hugh, joined by CEO and Editor-in-Chief Evan Smith.
Hello.
Managing Editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And Ben Philpott of the Tribune and KUT News.
Hi.
Our four topics today are the ongoing speaker's race drama, job numbers and how that affects the budget and the budget shortfall, the 2012 Senate race, and politicians on trial, which is Ross's topic. I'll start. As we tape this, Chuck Hobson's House Ethics Panel is in executive session. They decided to go behind closed doors to discuss the alleged threat that Brian Hughes, State Representative Brian Hughes of Mineola, received, or said he received, from Larry Phillips, a lieutenant for Speaker Strauss.
And the vice chairman of Chuck Hobson's
Ethics
committee.
Panel. Right. That is
exactly
correct.
As if this wasn't interesting enough, right?
He recused himself. He did not go and sit up on the dais there.
So that basically means he copped to doing this.
Right.
By recusing himself, he's copped to doing this.
Well, he's copped to "this is about me." That's all he's copped
he's
to.
He's not said recusing. He did.
No, he just said, you know, since this is about me, I'm not going to play.
Since the allegation is against me.
Right.
Right.
And Hughes and attorneys and the panel all went into executive session. They are still there now. Hughes, around 10:30, came out and said they were going to meet for another hour or so before they were finished in their private meeting, and then some sort of decision will be made. However, there's not a whole lot this panel can do. I mean, they essentially can issue a report or some sort of direction for the next legislature, but right. Lawmakers really can't take action on it.
What's the worst that could happen?
Larry, you shouldn't have said that. That's the worst that can
happen.
Well,
is it not, though? I was asking a couple other reporters down there about that. If he admits to it, is that some kind of political bribery? And then does the integrity unit get involved?
Well, I mean, it depends on what he admits to. Does he say that I definitively said to Brian Hughes that if you don't support this guy, we'll draw you out of a legislative district? Was it a direct threat? Was it it's complicated.
But also, who's we?
It's fuzzy.
What power did Larry Phillips have
zero power,
right?
Right. Right.
I guess that's maybe the next step. So does anybody try to draw the line, connect the dots back to Strauss, and Strauss said, hey, go threaten this guy? I don't know why he would.
I think at the end of the day, Brian Hughes just got a secure legislative district.
Exactly. You couldn't redistrict Brian Hughes.
That's exactly
out
right.
of his
I
seat
think,
now.
You know, ding. You know, he's
maybe
done.
Everybody should do it.
Yeah, there's 149 people slapping their foreheads going, I should have thought
I was
of it.
Threatened. Wait a minute. Didn't I mention that
wait,
to you
he
before?
He hurt me here.
Oh, yeah, exactly. My God.
Obviously, a lot of sideshows going on, but I think still at the end of the day that Republican Speaker Joe Strauss is convinced he remains securely in his spot. Something like last week when I spoke with him, he said he had 122 pledges that were pretty solid. So
well, again, he would say that. What's he going to tell you? Oh, I only have 40. I mean, but here's the thing. So I ran into a top Republican kind of insider's insider today, where I do all my business online at Starbucks. And this person said to me when I said, "So what's what do you think about Strauss?" This person said, "Look, he's got all the Democrats. They're not going to desert him, and he has enough Republicans to get past half."
So the math is there for him.
This is not a question as to whether Strauss has the numbers. Even if he's missing a lot of those people he claims to have his pledges, even if more of them peel off, in the end he can get to half. It's just is it going to be a drip, drip, drip to the point that he doesn't get to half by the time this all happens?
If you add the Democrats and the committee chairs, you're at more than he needs.
Yeah, and I understand that over the last couple of days there have been a number of incoming members, a number of freshmen, and Elise's friend Bill Zedler have all signed on with Paxton. But even those guys, It doesn't add up to very much. And, you know, Burka has the great Burka, the great Oracle Burka, has pronounced from the top of the mountain that he expects Chisholm to drop out of the race and to throw his support in with Paxton. So what does that get Paxton? Four more votes?
Well, there's two interesting votes. I mean, just let's take a sidebar here. Chisholm lost two votes in the panhandle, which was interesting. I mean, you know, if you're going to be a panhandle speaker, you're probably going to be the last one because there's no population up there. And the question after Laney left that job was, will anybody from this part of Texas ever get this again? Chisholm runs, and the two of the people that went with Paxton,
Perry and Landtroop, are both panhandle Republicans.
Both panhandle,
right?
Guys. You're not even winning your region. So, you know, right. Chisholm's, you know, one of the storylines here isn't that, you know, the drip, drip, drip against Strauss. It's the Chisholm's not getting any traction.
Well, the momentum also is clearly with Paxton.
Right.
Would you say?
To the extent that an insurgent has momentum.
And the anti-Strauss people are hoping to take something from this. And Michael Quinn Sullivan is sitting in the stands today. I did not see him with popcorn, but you know, he's obviously ready to pounce whatever gets decided today.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and we remarked over the weekend, you did on the blog, Ross, that Strauss, who is a low-key guy,
right,
not the kind of person to spend a bunch of money promoting himself under any circumstances, and God knows speakers' races have typically been inside baseball affairs. Strauss is spending money on ads,
right,
on conservative blogs saying, hey, look at me, I'm conservative. Right. Now, this is almost like Patrick Rose spending $700,000 in the last month of the campaign. Does Strauss know something that we don't?
I just think you don't leave things unanswered. I just, you know, this is one of those, you don't leave it unanswered. And you got to, if you're Joe Strauss, there's, you know, as we tape this, there's about 48 days left before they actually vote. That's all time where you can erode your support. He starts today with 122.
You're not likely to grow it.
He's winning. Right. You know, so you just got to keep it above 76. And, if you were to lose this race, I don't think he's going to lose this race at this point. But if you were going to lose this race and not have fought, that's something. I mean, you got to answer these things. You have to get out there and say, I am too pro-life,
but
I am too conservative,
Tom,
I am too this,
Tom,
I am too that.
Not even Tom Craddock spent money to advertise on the Drudge Report.
Where is he today?
Well, I understand that, but the reason that Tom Craddock is no longer speaker is not because he didn't do an ad buy.
Well, that's right.
I mean, I just think the idea that you open up, and clearly what Strauss is doing is geo-targeting. I'm sure viewers of the Drudge Report in Iowa are not getting a Joe Strauss is so conservative ad.
Right.
But the point is, the Strauss people, in a very, I thought, a very sophisticated way, bought geo-targeted ads on not just the Drudge Report, but other conservative sites as well.
Right.
I mean, I'll spend some money on the Empower Texan site. That'd be pretty funny, wouldn't it? to pronounce him as, you know, I am so conservative. And that's got to be a first.
The bigger experiment, right, here is third parties playing in these races. We're playing an outside game. This has always been Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, right? It all happens in the house. It's 150 people, nobody else's business.
So Michael Quinn Sullivan is a basilisk? What does that mean?
Well,
actually?
I mean, well, you know. I just froze. Sorry.
All right.
I got vapor lock on that.
Let's move on.
You got these third parties. You've got them playing an outside game in a way that they haven't played before, and Strauss is doing the same thing.
Anytime a Harry Potter reference gets dropped into the podcast, Elise immediately
I was just
moves
waiting
on.
For my chance to come in.
Have you seen the Harry Potter movie yet?
She hasn't even read all the books.
No, I only got
you
through the
read
fourth
all the books?
Did you go this weekend to see the Harry Potter movie?
My daughter went. I have a report from the 14-year-old. I'll go see it when – I want to wait until you can go to the theater and nobody in the theater has a wand or a cape.
Yeah, it was –
good point.
I will tell you,
good
Friday
point.
Night, it was a little much.
Yeah.
Ben, let's move on to your topic. The
Ben's
latest
kind
job
of like a muggle, actually. As
yes, he is. He is,
as
actually.
This podcast goes.
Ben's topic is the latest job numbers and how it might affect budgeting next session.
Well, I just thought it was interesting. You know, obviously Governor Perry is on a nationwide tour for just his book. He's not running for president. And he keeps talking about how great the Texas is and how many jobs we're creating and how 1,000 people a day or whatever are moving to the state of Texas. And the job numbers this past month show that 47,000, about 48,000 jobs were created in some of the industries, construction being a big one up. I just got to think, you know, enrollment growth is going to be a killer. It's got to be a killer this time, yep, on just about everything.
Right.
So you've got, it's great, I guess, for the state that obviously more jobs are coming in and everything, but as we're touting that everyone should move here and we're going to cut a half a gazillion dollars from the budget,
there's more people to pay for.
I mean, even if you just, I mean, just especially consider education is going to be cut this time, K through 12, for one of the first times in a while. And at the same time, all these 1,000 people a day are bringing their kids.
Well, in fact, not adding to education's budget.
Not adding to the budget is a cut.
Right. Because you have this growth. So they have this big announcement from the State Board of Education, I guess last week, that they were going to, that their funds have done fine this time and that they can contribute, I think it was $1.9 billion toward the budget. That barely covers enrollment.
And the fact is, you've got all these claims of how our job picture is so great, but when Jim Pitts tells a hometown crowd, we're going to cut a bunch of people from the state employee rolls right. to solve the budget problem, aren't the unemployment numbers going to look less good next year? I mean, right. the governor or whoever else can say, well, this, you know, of course, the reason that the unemployment numbers are higher in Texas is because we cut the budget, but you know what? The numbers are going to be higher.
That's actually right? an interesting point because Bill White and Kay Bailey Hutchison often made the point that when Governor Perry talked about job growth over the last few years, a lot of those jobs came in the government sector. Right. So it was actually because government was expanding and there were people hired in order to fill those places.
Based on the numbers this year, and I will be the first to say that every time I do a jobs number story, it's like pulling teeth to try to figure out exactly what these numbers are trying to tell you. Sure. They literally, on the press release, they put out two charts, and then they let you know that the information on both charts were collected using two different data pools. So it's apples to oranges. And when you question why things don't add up, they say, well, it's apples to oranges. And that's the only explanation you
and
basically
these are
get.
The experts. And,
yeah.
Right.
So, but we have actually shed, gosh, if I'm remembering right, we've shed several thousand government jobs so far this year in the state of Texas already.
Right.
So we're not adding government jobs this year. We're down several thousand. I don't remember the
number. I continue to be, and I tried to get at this with the governor when we interviewed him during the campaign there in October, and with not much success. But I continue as a relative budget novice to wonder, on the one hand, we claim that our economy is so great and we are better than all the other states and we weathered the recession so well and everything else. And on the other hand, we got a $25 billion budget shortfall. And somehow I'm supposed to believe that those two things are totally separate. They're apples and oranges right there, right? And that somehow one is not related to the other. So how can we claim on the one hand that the economy is so great, but on the other hand we have this unbelievably bad shortfall?
Some of it is it doesn't suck as bad. I mean, some of it is that the
Texas— But our shortfall is worse than most states.
Some of it is that, you know, up to a point, you know, probably, say, 6 or 8 months ago, up to a point, Texas was outperforming all the other states. Its economy was, its budget was, all of this stuff was running better. Texas always lags into a recession, you know, first in, first out, but we've still got this lingering effect of 2 years of lousy sales tax numbers, an underperforming state franchise tax, falling property values, all contributing less and less to government.
And that's on who, from a responsibility standpoint?
Well, you know, that's what the governor's race was about, and the voters didn't put it on anybody. It was kind of an interesting thing. I mean, you know, White tried to put it on Perry. You know, you would say, if you're chief executive while it happens,
right.
you're chief executive
you
while it happens.
You claim credit for stuff that happens on your watch. Why not take responsibility for
but,
stuff
but
that
thing
on
ended
watch.
2 weeks ago, and the voters, you know, that's not where the voters landed. That's not what they cared about. Yeah. That's not what they were
talking
about.
I'm less interested in blaming it on Governor Perry than just getting to an answer as to why we can sit here with a straight face and say our economy is so awesome when in fact we have a huge shortfall.
I think this is going to be really interesting. One of the if you go back, if you have 10 or 15 minutes, go watch Jim Pitts talk to that crowd in Ellis County.
Because you're referring to a blog post you put up on the Tribune site.
It's a Tea Party, right? And it's a Tea Party meeting in Ellis County over the weekend. I think it was on Saturday. And, you know, they were pushing him. They said, you know, are you going to cut the budget? Are you going to do this? And he started talking about, yeah, we're going to cut the budget. We're going to kill a bunch of agencies. Agencies we don't kill, some of them are going to get cut 75 to 80%. It includes Medicaid. It includes Medicare, which was sort of weird since the state doesn't fund Medicare. And he laid out a bunch of stuff. And he said, and I think we can get this thing balanced. We're almost there. I think we can get this thing balanced without hitting the rainy day fund. It's the points at which he was mentioning specific programs. If you go watch this tape and watch the audience, they say when he said we're going to cut Medicaid, some guy in the audience clearly says, "Say that again."
Mm-hmm. Well, it comes down to
particulars. I think this is going to be very interesting.
Everybody
this is
wants
like his
to cut
topic
government.
Last week.
Nobody
right.
wants to cut their government.
Right.
Right. That's it. It's when it's going to come home to roost when that happens.
As that old political joke, everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. Right. when you get to the particulars, this is going to be very, very difficult.
Saving that one for the best of the year end, best of Tribcast.
Right.
Let's switch over to Evan's topic and the 2012 Senate race. We're already looking ahead to this, huh?
Well, it's partly a boredom, postpartum depression after the end of Election Day.
Right. Gossip inertia, right?
But the reality is, though, we know that there is stuff happening. I mean, you told me, Elise, that you have a friend who received a Roger Williams in 2012 mailer.
Yep.
Already.
The week after the election.
We know that this is happening. We know there's already been a declaration by Bill White, believe it or don't believe it, I probably believe it, that he's not going to run for the Senate race, despite what all the speculation industry says.
That's
probably true. And Kay is back to her, you know, now serving waffles. You know, I will not actually answer directly and conclusively what my plans are for the next election, which is driving at least a bunch of people on both the Democratic and Republican sides who want to run crazy. It's sort of about 2012, and it's sort of about the next elections in 2014. If I'm not wrong, Ross, Ben, Elise, in 2014, we are looking at the possibility of open seats. Governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, land commissioner, comptroller. I mean, the likelihood is all five of the big offices on the ballot are going to be open. Now, the Senate, I think Cornyn is up again in 14, is he not? Didn't Cornyn just get elected in 8?
I think that's right, yeah.
Right, so, yes, Noriega lost to Cornyn in 08. Right. So, okay, but, so accepting the Senate race, assuming Cornyn is not going to leave his position, you got major offices open. To some degree, the first domino that falls for 2014 is what does Kay do for 2012, particularly on the Republican side.
Right.
Because either Abbott or Dewhurst is going to have a decision to make with regard to the Senate seat, which will impact up and down the line what happens in 14. And it would be nice if Senator Hutchison made a decision and stuck to it so that people could prepare themselves. She's not obligated to do it. And as you point out, Ross, in the column you wrote for the Tribune on Friday, she's not obligated to declare her intentions until January of the year that she's up.
Right, right, right. And the thing to watch is her finances. She dumped her federal account into her state account. And right now, I guess the latest numbers available were September 30th of this year. She had 52,000 in there.
Which doesn't sound like somebody planning on running. On the other hand, there's a lot of time.
Yeah, Senate race costs $10 million. So if she's going to run, you'll see her raising money.
The part that I think is really interesting is as you alluded to in this column, is what does Chet Edwards do? So now that Chet Edwards has suddenly returned to the private sector, he may work for a little while, gather his string, but he has to be a potential candidate for either the Senate seat, unless he's done in electoral politics.
Right.
The Democrats don't have anybody to run. He could be a conceivably a Senate candidate, or he could conceivably be a candidate for governor.
I think there's an indication that he's not done in electoral politics because he hasn't immediately taken up any offers to lobby. We're hearing talk that he might be teaching a course at the LBJ school.
It's where you cool your jets, right?
Right. And so that might be a good place to sort of land for a while and not actually, you know, get
raise
that lobby stink on you. So.
Right.
But you have to believe that Edwards, given his long time in electoral office and the relationships he has with a lot of key Democratic funders in Texas, would not have a problem getting enough money to run. The question is whether at a time when demographics are changing,
right,
does a good old white boy from, you know, from Waco. Is he the motivator of the turnout that the Democrats would need?
Well, they've got to look at it and say, you know, they've got enough data here. I mean, if you're a politician and you're looking at this as a business plan, you've got enough data here. You look at it and you say, you know, as a Democrat, the last Democrat who won was in 94 on the statewide ballot. And since 98, nobody's broken 46%.
And that last Democrat who won in 94 was Bob Bullock.
Bullock, Sharp.
Sharp. Dan Morales, right?
Morales.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Democrats who were elected in 82 and then the ones who were elected in 90 kind of hung in there.
And so, now we have this, you know, I think Andy Brown is the highest ranking elected Democrat in the state now, actually.
You got to get way down into the judicial ranks.
Scroll down, vote Andy Brown.
Scroll down, that's right. So, I mean, you've got to look at it as if you're a Democrat, you got to look at it and say, you know, is it even possible for a Democrat to win statewide in Texas? Is Obama going to be a drag on the Democratic ticket in 2 years in Texas, or is he going to be a boon to it? Is the economy going to be? I mean, there's a million variables here. And
will there be a popular Republican on the ballot who may have been a governor of Texas?
Right.
Or of Alaska.
Right.
Or of Alaska. Yeah.
I mean,
or even
honestly,
Huckabee.
I mean, you know, there was this thing that came out this weekend that said, oh, you know, so the first one of these guys who has a model, you know, he puts in the numbers at the front end, beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, and at the other end comes a prediction for what happens. And they go, oh, Obama's going to win. The economy is going to turn around and blah, blah, blah. Well, of course, we don't know that. But you're right that the Obama factor is significant.
Right.
And if you're someone like Chet Edwards and you're thinking 12-14, do you want to bet against Obama figure that running in 12 is bad and that 14 could be the first midterm of a Republican administration, and it could be to your chances what this last election was to the chances of Republicans running in the first term of Obama's, you know, midterms of Obama's administration.
Right.
Don't know.
Or does Obama do pretty well in 2 years and have another bad midterm that messes up all the
politics
Democrats running
is always
for governor?
About
you know, that
right.
The little data that they spit out the other day, I believe I saw that the only Republican they had beating President Obama was Mitt Romney, who, if you listen to the Tea Partiers, doesn't have a shot in hell of winning the Republican
nomination. Well, they don't like him. In fact, Romney, I think all the problems that Romney had last time haven't gone away. It's just a comparison.
No, they're magnified now.
They're magnified. I want to say one more thing. I'm looking at the legislature, as I know all of you are too, and trying to identify, are there any Democrats in the legislature, really the only place where there are elected Democrats of any consequence anymore? Are there any Democrats in the legislature who present in any way as a plausible statewide candidate based on current activity and current conditions?
Kirk Watson.
But I say the
Raphael
one,
and
the,
Chia.
The one,
Raphael and Chia.
But I mean, Anchia, we all like Anchia because he's pretty and because he's, you know, he's got potential and everything, right? But the thing about Watson is just getting up in everybody's grill. This is not a for Watson or against Watson statement. It's just an acknowledgement that of all, you think about what all the Democrats are doing right now in the face of this obliteration on Election Day, the one who is sort of sticking it up the nose of people is Watson.
He's brilliant.
He's managed to get under the skin in the last 2 months of Perry, Dewhurst, and Combs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That is not nothing.
Right.
And he's acting like somebody who is...
Well, what he's doing is raising his profile. Whether it's intentioned on raising his profile or getting something else done, you know, you just got to, you know, figure that out for yourself. So it is raising his profile.
He continues to make himself a potential candidate simply by virtue of his level of activity and his unwillingness to sit and be quiet and be a good boy.
Right.
And the Democrats really don't have a lot of other people who are willing to do that.
Right. Ross, just with our remaining couple minutes, politicians on trial, Tom DeLay.
So, yeah, as we record this, the jury is actually out on Tom DeLay. And
just like the executive session.
It's just like, yeah, isn't that funny? And, you know, it's weird. The jury's out on Tom DeLay. Chuck Hobson's committee is in the Chamber of Secrets over there talking about, you know, who did what on the speaker's race.
It's just Harry Potter Day.
And it is. Just going to have to live with it, Elise. And get out your cape. And Keno Flores is waiting for sentencing. So, you know, you sort of look at these cases and you know, they're all kind of fascinating if you're in this stuff, but I wonder if any of them has any forward cant to
it. Does anybody even care about Tom DeLay?
Well, that's the question. I mean, you know, the Tom DeLay story is largely over and we're basically sealing that up. The Keno Flores story is largely over. Does that actually change any behavior going forward? We talked about this business in the House a little bit. Do these things really matter? I mean, it's kind of interesting. You kind of get, other than sort of pulling everybody down, and yeah, politics is nasty and crooked and, you know, all those guys are a bunch of crooks. I mean, it sort of opens up that argument. But does this stuff really matter? I mean, it's kind of an interesting moment in this thing, an inflection point.
I don't know that the DeLay verdict will surprise anybody one way or the other. And in the end, I don't know that it has even any bearing at all on right.
He's like way out of power in terms of political.
What do the Democrats do with the news if DeLay is convicted?
Well, you know, the lesson there was you can't use corporate money, but in the meantime, the U.S. Supreme Court
said
you can use corporate money.
Right.
You know, the lesson on Keno Flores was the lesson as old as politics. You know, you're not supposed to take that stuff. It's not yours.
Right. You're from Palmview, not Grease My Palmview. I mean, the reality is that when the notion of Keno Flores being corrupt is like not exactly a big, you know, breaking news alert, you know.
And then this House thing. I mean, as we said before, I mean, you know, sort of, you know, it's kind of it's in the speaker's race. Who cares? Did he really say that?
They can't do that much about it anyway.
We've just been through an election cycle where three Republican members of the House who were accused of crimes.
Right.
Got reelected by wide margins.
Right.
We've already proven that, you know, we live in an era of no consequences. We've talked about this. I mean, the fact is DeLay and Flores are both out of office. These people were in office.
And Craddock is no longer speaker. Craddock implicated in that DeLay thing, too. So,
yeah.
It's a, you know, we should maybe not be surprised anymore by the way these things happen.
On that note.
You're going away for Thanksgiving,
that's
Elise?
Right. We'll be back. I will be back to podcast.
Where
next
are you going?
Week. But I must take a transatlantic flight now.
Where are you going?
I'm going to Amsterdam to go home to see my parents, and then we're flying to Barcelona together. So,
are you
eat
looking
some
forward?
Muscles.
You're looking forward she to going to small. Getting to second base with the TSA.
Yes, I like getting the whole feel up thing. Sometimes I want a second pat down.
We begin with junk, and we end with junk.
On behalf of Evan, Ross, Ben, our producer Todd, and myself, thanks for listening, and have a happy and safe Thanksgiving.